And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 707, coming at you a couple days before Christmas. So if you guys are having a happy holiday season for whatever you choose to participate in any function or form, and have some fun with that, with your friends, families, or whoever. Hope you guys are having a good time out there and staying as warm as possible as some storms are going through parts of the country and all those formats as well. On today's episode, we're kind of going back into our draft and hold box. We reference the NFBC Draft Champions a lot. There's also the NFBC 50s for those that want, but we're going to focus on the Draft Champions, but you could use it in Fantrax has draft and holds. There's a lot of them out there. Just remember, we're just using the ADP, and the talk will be mostly surfaced around NFBC Draft Champions 15-league formats. In order to help me do this, we're talking relief pitchers. It's a very important thing. As anybody has drafted these drafts, we go so deep. It's 50 rounds, 15 players. Do the math. So you're speculating on closers, even the third chance at a closer type stuff in drafts. So relief pitching is huge. In order to help me do this, you can find this gentleman at Fantrax, where he does great writing there, at Rotoballer, where he's doing writing. He is one of the original voices on the Fantasy Baseball beat, which is now on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. So check out all that. And you can also check him out on the Twitter at MDRC0508. Always one of my funnest Twitter handles to announce on this show. Mr. Mike Carter, how we doing, my friend?
Bubba, I'm great, man. How are you doing? Are you got your Christmas shopping done? You all set?
Yes, the actual shopping's done. I have to go pick up pies and like one more thing. Pies are already ordered. I just got to pick them up. And one other thing later today, we're recording on a Monday for those. And knock on wood, we're good. What about you?
I'm good. I'm as I get older, I find myself doing more shopping earlier. And what I end up doing is I don't really shop. I shop for experiences for my family, so I don't have to buy more stuff for my house.
Smart. Someone actually told me the other day, once their kids, like in yours, are in high school. I think Jack in high school yet?
No, he's in eighth grade.
Eighth grade. God, he keeps. I've known him forever. So, your kids are at that age now where, like we talked earlier, you don't really need a whole lot of toys. And I was talking to somebody else the other day. Once their kids got to like junior high school, they stopped doing presents for each other and they let the kids pick one place to go to. And they did like a family vacation every year. That was like the Christmas. Like, we'll go do this for like 3 or 4 days. I'm like, that's actually smart because you get to do memories and learn things and have fun and all these things that you don't really need sitting at home that could be gifts type stuff. So,
yeah, we did that. We did it a few years ago. Ellie chose Hamilton.
Nice.
And Jack chose the local monster truck rally, which is totally on par for both.
I was about to say, from what I've known, getting to know you for the years, that sounds just about right. That's awesome. Hamilton's awesome too, by the way. For those that enjoy some actual culture in life, Hamilton's amazing.
The best part about that was that we let the kids choose who they took with, and Ellie wanted me to go to Hamilton, which meant that Katie got to go to the monster truck.
That's even better. That's even better. Your wife must have come home going,
I've never lived that one down.
Yes, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, hopefully more fun in store for you guys this year. But I mentioned Fantrax, Rotoballer, Fantasy Baseball Beat. Why don't you let everybody know a little bit more about what you have going on over there before we really get into the meat and potatoes of this?
Well, it's been a little bit of a quiet time here, the last month or so since we got back from Arizona. I haven't done too much in terms of the fantasy baseball stuff, but as you and I both know, it's a never-ending season, and it's kind of ramping up now. And so it's a great time to really kind of start thinking about these strategies and looking at some of these guys that might be floating around later on in the leagues that you're drafting. So right now I'm getting ready to do some pieces over at Rotoballer, some player profiles. I'm getting started on those this week, and then my rankings for Fantrax, the relief pitchers, should be coming out pretty soon. I'm guessing those are going to be fairly controversial just because there's not a lot of, consistency when we talk about relief pitcher markets, right? So you end up, Rick Graham, my good friend who works over at Pitcher List as well and is a big guru in the fantasy bullpen industry as well, if you will, always says that the words safe and closer don't go in the same sentence. And we'll talk a little bit about that today, I'm sure.
Most definitely. It's a wild one. Like, again, for these DC formats, closers, the quote-unquote locked-in elite closers, will go earlier, according to people what think ADP would be in these draft and hold formats, because you want to quote-unquote lock in a closer. But like you said, a lot of volatility. You got injuries. You got trades nowadays. That's happening more and more often, it feels like. Guys just aren't good and get replaced. Craig Kimbrell, we're looking at you. So on and so forth down the list. So you need to, in these later rounds, I got something I'd like to focus on, almost certain drafts, I'll take like five or six just spec shots, like the last 10 picks. Maybe it's too aggressive compared to some, but that's how I had a lot of Lucas Irsig last year when he was at the A's. Did not think he'd go to Kansas City and be who he was, but I digress. That kind of theory works in your brain. So we're going to go alphabetical here. We're going to start with the American League. And thanks to poor ownership, we have a new leader in the alphabetical department in the American League. The Athletics is what they are called these days. The Athletics, ATH. So, Mike, we know Mason Miller is a machine. Ryan, who's in the chat right now, we talk about it a lot. We'll watch Miller close out a game before a lot of our evening shows and just kind of talk baseball while he's on. And dude's an electric factory. But Miller's also got a history of elbow issues, forearm issues. And so that's always a question mark. So we're looking at the Oakland Athletics. What should we be targeting in draft and hold formats outside of, say, a Mason Miller?
Yeah, Miller's fantastic, obviously. I mean, he's the type of guy that if he's healthy and continues to do what he did last year, he's a top five closer. However, that word volatility that you use is an important one here based on the injury history and based on the fact that we're also dealing with the Athletics. And even though they've made some moves to bolster the rotation, there had been some talk at the end of the year that perhaps Miller would get a chance to go back to the rotation. I don't see that being an issue at this point, but I could see them trading him to the highest bidder and trying to sell very high on what he is. Should that happen, I think that the best guy to target here is Michael Ohtañez, who came up in the second half last year and did a really nice job working behind Miller and getting the ball to Miller. The thing that really pops my eye on Ohtañez is the 36% K rate. And I'm looking at that as something that I desperately want and most of my relief pitchers, if not all of them, if I can get it. He threw 34 innings for them last year. He did have a save. He had a few holds. He had about a half dozen holds. That K rate really kind of got to me. And I think he's sort of a sleeper there. You look at the rest of the guys that are in that bullpen. I mean, Tyler Ferguson, TJ McFarland, those types of guys I think are better suited to those middle inning type of roles, maybe a high leverage kind of situation. To me, Ohtañez would be the guy to go for there. And his ADP is pretty nice. I mean, I think it's about 713 last I checked. So he's a guy that you can get for free, essentially, and might fall into some saves there.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I just have the December ADP up. It's been six drafts. Yeah, it's 708. People might be getting wise to you. He's gone as high as 600, as low as 750. So that's one thing you'll notice, listeners, that a lot of these later picks, there'll be a wide range. Like someone's going to go into a draft going, I want this guy. There'll be other drafts where maybe they don't even know who he is. And that's kind of – you'll notice that throughout these drafts. But I have at least one Ohtañez share, and I'll be making notes of that going forward. Of these are guys to kind of keep an eye on as starting pitching gets murky. You've already got enough bad outfielders or something out there. Let's start taking some specs on some late inning arms.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go to Baltimore here. The Baltimore Orioles, you know, we missed out on the big man, just an absolute machine last year in Felix Bautista, who was out with, I believe, Tommy John surgery. Almost came back last year, but I'm glad they didn't bring him back, let him get fully recovered. So Felix should be back. They still have Sir Anthony, who was really good in his absence once Craig Kimbrell went down. How do you assess this injury? Like, first off, what are your thoughts just in general on Bautista, because coming off the injury? Because people are drafting him like he's still the dude. For those keeping track at home, ADP is still like 56. Like, you got to pay a price for him. But what's your thoughts on this Baltimore situation?
Boy, you know, it scares me this early on in the season to be taking him that highly. I mean, I think he's the type of guy that I would like to see in spring and see what the velocity looks like, see what the command looks like. We know that that's the last thing to come back when these guys have the Tommy John surgery, right? So the velocity probably won't be too damaged. It's the control and the command that could be issues for him. That being said, he's a top five dynamic type of closer if he's right. And he's going to be pitching on a team that's going to win 90 games. And so those are attractive features there to look at. Behind him, boy, you know, it gets murky for Baltimore here. And to be honest, I'm a little surprised by their approach. I mean, obviously, I'm not a general manager. I'm a middle-aged, you know, fat white guy living in suburban Chicago, right? But, like, you know, wouldn't you think that if you'd want to maybe insulate yourself against the idea that Bautista might not be ready or that he might not be able to go 2 days in a row and do better than Sir Anthony or Yennier Cano? I mean, those are good guys to have. Don't get me wrong. But we know that they're not – cast real well as closers. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if Baltimore did not stand pat on this one and got somebody else to back up there. You know, a guy like Tanner Scott would be a great fit for them. I just don't know if they would cough up the money to be able to get a guy like that. I think that they should probably get some insurance there. I mean, that being said, Bautista is a top five guy, but if I were drafting now, I'd be really leery about drafting him that high. I would say Cano and Dominguez are probably the best guys backing him up there. Now, they are going to use Keegan Aiken, it looks like, now, too, in a higher leverage role, which is interesting in that fact. But he's also another lefty that they have there, and we know that a lot of managers have a propensity against not using lefties as closers. So they've got some good options there behind Bautista, but, man, he's a linchpin for the success of their season right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've actually passed on him twice while I was trying to get closers. At that point in the draft, I've gone to like Raisel Iglesias, who I love. I love the consistency there. If Batista's a beast, I have the same concerns you do, like very similar concerns. When you're looking at Sir Anthony, ADP 607, Yainer Cano 690. So I think I've done a Cano pick or two just because he's late, and I'll give it a shot because you never know. Like, I want Batista to be great, but it's very interesting, to say the least, in Baltimore. All right, next up here, we have the Boston Red Sox, who are adding all the starting pitching, which is great. They lost Kenley. They might have Liam Hendricks back, it looks like. They signed Aroldis Chapman. How are you approaching the Boston situation?
Boy, what a mess this is, right? You know, Hendricks was coming back. What a story, right? I mean, the guy comes back from cancer. He knows his elbow's blown out. He comes back anyway, pitches, then he has to have the surgery. The last we heard of Hendricks in September, it was not going real well. The velocity was not there. He was sitting at 89, 90, and that's really his bread and butter. I mean, he's got to be able to have that to be successful with his other secondary offerings. The one thing we know about him is he's a complete bulldog, and he's if anybody can do it and come back strong, it's him. Aroldis Chapman, that signing was interesting to me. I have a tendency to disagree a little bit with people who are casting him as the closer already. Mm-hmm. He had really, really good numbers pitching in a setup role last year before he got traded. And he did end up with 14 saves last year, and he had over 20 holds, and he still got the high, you know, high powered velocity, and the K rate was 37% last year. But on a really good team, he's probably going to be a setup guy and not the closer, which leads us to then, is Hendricks really that guy? Are they going to do a co-closing situation? Or can we look at a guy like Justin Slayton to kind of step up into this mix too? Like, it's possible that Hendricks and Chapman, if both healthy, could step into a spot where maybe they are supporters for Slayton. And Slayton's ADP is over 400. He's a dark horse, so I think could really kind of fall into a spot depending on what Boston wants to do here. And we've seen that they're not afraid to overspend on pitching. They gave Chapman $10 million. They just gave Walker Buehler $21 million today for some reason I don't fully understand. And so maybe Slayton is the guy that kind of steps up into this role. He had 25% strikeout rate last year, had a couple of saves, ERA under 3. He's a good guy, a Rule 5 guy last year that they got and kept all year. And so it would not surprise me at all if at the end of this that Slayton is somewhere in there. And let's not forget either, you know, the Red Sox also have Garrett Whitlock coming back from injury too. Does he go back into the rotation? Is he a guy that is a bullpen piece that they use as a multiple inning weapon, or is it somebody that they use as a closer? This one's wide open for me, Bubba, and I'm not touching it right now.
Yeah, Hendricks is around 250, give or take. I've passed every time. And again, I love the man, Liam Hendricks. But with my fancy dollars are on the line, I just don't know if I can go there yet. Chapman at 310. He's interesting because I think strikeouts, his whip's a disaster, but there's questions there. you mentioned Slayton, like you're getting them around 400, a little past 400, depending on what draft you're in. And that's got some upside. And before the Chapman signing, people were saying Slayton. And all of a sudden, like you said, they're kind of like disappearing on it a little bit there. So the one going the latest, maybe, has the upside to be the one you want. So I these are the kind of discussions I like having on this show to at least speculate on a DC, because that's how you can make up some ground in a big, big way. All right, a team that might only have a couple saves this year to begin with, but Mike knows them very well, is the Chicago White Sox. And I'll be honest, Mike, when I started doing my first DCs a couple months ago, I guess it is now, and I saw that their potential closer is a guy named Justin Anderson. And I say a guy because – honestly, let's be real. How many average people know who Justin Anderson is when it comes to closing? I'm just gonna leave it at that. What do you think we should be targeting, if anything, with Chicago White Sox bullpen?
Well, I share your disdain here. I mean, Justin Anderson ended up being the guy in closer in name only, I think. He hadn't been in the major leagues for 5 years before finding a spot with the White Sox last year, and actually did pitch relatively effectively despite the peripheral numbers not looking terrific. You know, he's not a big K guy. He does limit hard contact quite a bit, which was fine, but a guy that's best suited toward a middle role for a team like the White Sox and probably wouldn't be in baseball on too many other teams. The guy that I'm interested in here is a guy that you might have heard of being on the West Coast, and that's Prelander Baroa.
Boom, love
him. His ADP is about almost 600, I think, right now. He's got electric stuff. This is a guy that really looks like he could be that type of a guy. You know, they got him in the Gregory Santos trade from Seattle last year, and was a guy that I had seen pitch in relief for Seattle earlier, and I thought, wow, this guy's really electric. He's got a really nasty slider. His four-seam fastball is a really high velocity, like 98th percentile velocity in MLB. Obviously, his 15.7 walk rate is perfect for the White Sox. But if he ever controls that or figures that piece out, this guy could be a nightmare. I mean, if you pull him up on StatCast and look at the random videos and stuff like that, you see this guy's slider and what he can do with it. Man, oh man, he's got a couple of nasty ones. I mean, he's got one that's like a wide looking kind of more like a sweeper, and he's got another one that's got a real tight break on it. And they're both times the catcher, the videos that I've seen, the catchers are having a hard time getting it. And so he's a guy that I think could really come on. But I think what the White Sox will do, and I could be dead wrong on this, but I think what they'll do is they'll get a veteran off the scrap heap for the first half and let Baroa kind of work through this mess of what he's created for himself. Thinking like a Jose Leclerc or a Dylan Floro, somebody who has a little bit of experience having done the job, nobody great at it, but then try to flip that guy at the deadline and then let Baroa be the guy that comes down there. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Baroa was able to overtake somebody there and might be good for 10, 15 saves, depending on the level of opportunity he gets. But he's the one guy in the bullpen that can be seen as a little bit exciting there for the White Sox.
I love that pick. You've been the White Sox correspondent for me on our on my team previews. I've had Corbin Young be my Mariners guy, and on the first one we did there a couple years ago, Baroa was his prospect to watch. He loved it, and he I think he wrote something up or whatever on his slider, and that woke my eyes up to him. And then when he got traded, first thought, I'm like, wow, he's gonna be the closer of the White Sox. And then the White Sox said White Sox things. Baroa got hurt too, to be fair,
right?
But talent wise, I'm with, like, for closing quote unquote stuff, Baroa is filthy. Like, there's something there. So I hope to get a shot at him. Even Uncle Ted in the chat had Prelander Baroa as a target. So I think that'll be a fun one to keep an eye on for sure. Cleveland Guardians, it's Emmanuel Clase's world. We're all living in it. We saw some hiccups in the postseason, but again, everyone's human. Cade Smith's great. Is there anything we should be looking at here, or is it pretty much Emmanuel Clase or bust?
Yeah, those guys are both great guys to have around. And Cade Smith has a lot of value, even if he's not closing, as you just pointed out. I mean, the K rate, the ratio help that you get from him is going to be great. The one question I have is I'm still kind of trying to wrap my mind around what Cleveland's doing. Like, I'm not 100% sure. Like, it doesn't matter if I like it or not, but I'm not sure is Clase available? Is he on the market? I mean, we don't know. Right. It looks like right now, like, he's going to stay, but if he didn't and Cade Smith was there, there's another guy there that I think people should think about here. And that's Andrew Walters, who was a right-handed reliever, a high octane guy. I know Vlad has tweeted about him a few times and is real high on him. I'm real high on him too. Cleveland just finds guys that know how to pitch, and they keep turning them out. And every year they've got two or three guys. You're like, I never even heard of this guy. And all of a sudden, you know, he's a lockdown type of reliever. So yeah, I think it's Clase and Smith. Obviously Gattis is more of a setup guy. I don't know that he would be a guy that would be closing, but Andrew Walters is a name to kind of earmark. And also Eric Sobrowski, who's a lefty, which means he probably won't get an opportunity. But he had a 40% strikeout rate in a very small sample size. Again, also had trouble in the playoffs, as you mentioned, with Class A, Bubba. But those are a couple of guys that you might want to earmark just as people down the road that you might want to take a chance on.
I like the Walters call, because in December drafts, the six of them, he has not even been picked So you can get him one of your last rounds and take a dart on him. Those are the players I enjoy taking chances on late. And if he can get you that strikeout upside, even with some ratios, then maybe sneak in a win or get some saves late. Insanely valuable in the DC, folks. It sounds silly, but insanely valuable as injuries continue to pile up throughout a season. All right, let's go to Detroit. We kind of joked about it early about they had three or four guys that felt like closing at different times last year and all kind of serviceable in a roundabout way when they got in there. But, you know, it still seems wide open in Detroit. You got you had Foley, who was good. You had Vest, Brisky, Holt. Like, there's a slew of arms in Detroit. How would you approach the Tiger situation and drafts? Because they're all coming relatively affordable compared to your locked-in guys.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic there. I mean, I think AJ Hinch showed in the playoffs that he's willing to use anybody at any time, right? So I think Holton is the best pitcher of the bunch. However, I think his role is going to be that of some days he's going to be the opener. Some days he's going to pitch two innings in the middle. Some days he might get the save opportunity. Obviously, when they were going well last year, Foley was the guy who was closing for them a lot, but he leaves a little bit to be desired as a closer. He doesn't have that high strikeout, even though he gets a lot of ground balls. He doesn't have that high strikeout rate that you would like to have in a closer. And obviously, anybody in Detroit that we're talking about is not going to be your top pick. If your first closer is coming from Detroit, you got bigger problems than any of us can help you with. Brisky is a little bit of an interesting guy. He's another one who has pitched a lot in a bunch of hybrid roles there in Detroit. I would say right now that I would lean towards Foley just because he's got the experience, and it's hard to, you know, remember, but he had 28 saves last year, yep. You know, so he really did put up a pretty good season all in all, despite the fact that maybe he's not your prototypical type of closer. He's going to help you with ratios a little bit, but the strikeout rate's not going to really help you, but he could get saves. And I think Detroit's going to be a better team. They're definitely going to be a media darling, a sleeper pick to be able to make the playoffs. And so we'll see what happens there. Although this whole situation to me screams free agent signing, whether that be Kenley, whether that be a Tanner Scott, they really could use a legit closer here, you know?
And that's where I'm with you on that. Like, again, I've taken shots at a Brisky, a Foley. I like Holton in general in DCs, because if he opens middle, whatever, he'll get you some wins here and there and stuff. So another serviceable piece, it doesn't cost much. But this Tigers team, they've seemed to realize that in that central division that they're kind of going, they got the young bats that have come up, you got Scoobal doing awesome stuff, they're kind of building things there. Why not go put a 1 or 2 year deal out there for a Yates, Scott, a Kenley be perfect there, honestly. A 1 year, like, give him $14 million or something and say, here you go, this is yours. And somehow if the young kids aren't hitting, you can flip them. Like, there's things you can do in a big way. So I'm with you. If this team, because they did make the postseason, they were a good ball club that I think is going to get better. At least we should all think they're going to get better because they're young. So signing a locked-in closer would make a lot of sense. I'm with you on that as well. The old Houston Astros, everyone's favorite team in baseball. I have no problem with them, but again, I didn't have to face them. Josh Hader is the guy. He's fun if you believe in every other season stuff, but that's just kind of fun group think, I guess. But you have Hader, and then, you know, Presley and these other guys, the veterans are there. Abreu was a guy going into last year everyone wanted to target late in DCs. How are you approaching the Houston situation?
Man, another team that just always ends up with an embarrassment of riches, it feels like, in that bullpen situation. Obviously, you know, a lot of people, me included, I'm going to throw myself into this, have been waiting for the downfall of Josh Hader, but it really hasn't happened yet. You know, 37.8% K rate last year, 34 saves. Obviously, the ERA is a little inflated. And so if you're going to take a guy like Hader as your top closer, and he's going, what, you know, top four closer picks right now, you better be prepared to do something to offset what you're going to get with the ratio hurt that you're going to take from him. I don't personally like closers having ERAs or whips that are that high, but you can work around it when you're getting 100 strikeouts and 35 saves. You know, maybe you work around it. I like Abreu better than Presley. I think Presley is a guy that's on the market. I wouldn't be surprised to see him move, considering what Houston's been doing here the last couple of weeks. If that happens, then I think it's Abreu's show should something happen to Hader. They got a couple other guys that had some level of success there in the middle. Taylor Scott is a guy that's been good for them, but again, not a closer. I mean, I don't see Forrest Whitley stepping into a role like that or anything. I think it's probably Abreu or Presley. Presley's obviously got the experience if they keep him. I would lean more towards Abreu probably.
Yep, I'm with you on the Abreu train. Yeah, Hader just continues to get it done, which is so much fun. Next up on the docket here, we have the Kansas City Royals. Now, this one's interesting because Lucas Irsig comes over after they traded for Hunter Harvey. Everyone thought it'd be Hunter Harvey. Harvey gets hurt. Irsig jumps in. I was a huge Irsig fan in Oakland. Like, I loved him there. He was awesome in KC. Seems to be the guy going into it. But in reality, like I said, they have options there in Kansas City. There's a lot of way. Like, Irsig's good in a lot of roles. So how would you approach this situation in Kansas City? Because Irsig has been slowly moving up ADPs as like one of the more popular reliever twos, I would say.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I mean, to me, having seen him pitch in Oakland, I thought he was underutilized there, obviously, in the way that they approached using him. This is the type of guy that I love because when you and I are talking about stuff and looking at guys that have it, you're going to start seeing more guys like Irsig get into the bullpen because he's got a four-pitch mix. This is not a guy that's throwing fastball slider, you know, and hoping for the best, you know. This is a guy who's got a four-seamer, a slider, a sinker, and a changeup, and he throws them all about the same. You know what I mean? Like, the same percentage-wise. I mean, four-seamer is going to be a little bit more, but, like, the slider, the sinker, and the changeup are all, like, 20, 24% somewhere in there. So he really keeps guys guessing and off-balanced. I think based on what we know of how Hunter Harvey has been used historically, I would lean towards Kansas City thinking that Harvey is going to be their eighth inning guy and that Irsig is going to be their closer. And I'm expecting, if that's the route that they go on, I'm expecting 30 saves from this guy. I mean, I think that's why you're starting to see the ADP go up because this guy really does know how to pitch too, which is interesting because he was not raised as a pitcher. I think he was a third baseman before he became a pitcher, but his stuff is great. I mean, if you guys go look at his StatCast page, I mean, find me more red, you know, like you're not going to find anybody that's got more of it than him. So the stuff is there. The opportunity looks to be there. The question is, how are the Royals going to look at using him? Because it doesn't matter what you or I think, you know, it matters what Matt Quatraro thinks and how he wants to use his guys. But they've got Schreiber there. They've got some of those other like failed starter type guys that are, you know, flying around. They say Bubich is going back to the rotation, but they've got Daniel Lynch and the guys like that that they've tried as starters that looked really good in the bullpen, quite honestly. So I think it's Irsig, long story short, and that's who I'm putting my money on. And if I got him as a closer too, I would be ecstatic.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Irsig, so I've been trying to get him. Him going up in ADP has been bumming me out because I have to be even more aggressive now. But yeah, I'm with you. I think it's his gig. I would speculate on Harvey if people want to, just for some reason things change. But yeah, I think there's a lot there. Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. It's been everyone's wanted Ben Joyce forever. If there's ever a year, it would be this until maybe they sign someone else. So how are we approaching the Angels situation? Because they were very aggressive early in free agency, but left the closing situation alone for now.
Yeah, and I think they're going to. I mean, I think I don't see them. I mean, it is the Angels, so God only knows what they might be thinking. But I think, you know, we got Joyce middle of the season, and I think a lot of people, me included, were a little surprised that obviously the octane's there. The average mile per hour is like 102.5 or something like that, right? But the strikeout rate wasn't great. You know, I mean, he got a lot of ground balls, and but his K rate was about 23%. And so, you know, I think he's an interesting guy because I think he'll start the season. They'll want him to start the season as the closer, but they also have money tied up with Robert Stevenson, and God only knows what his health is going to look like. But, you know, that's a guy that has that pedigree too. And so I think it could be interesting. There's another guy there too, you know. Jose Quijada is still hanging around there, and they used him as a closer a little bit 2 years ago before he too got hurt. And then they had another guy that they were running out there last year named Ryan Zephyrhan, who is actually looking pretty good too. Another guy with high velocity, good K stuff, decent ratios to go along with that. So it's not all gloom and doom here in Los Angeles in terms of their bullpen. I'm a little wary of Joyce because I just don't know if that's going to end up being his role. I mean, he could end up being a guy that comes in the fifth or sixth inning and gives them a change of pace with that high velo, and then, you know, gives the closer job to somebody else that they maybe have more trust in.
Yeah, I've been really not focused on drafting Joyce anywhere. And one of the big reasons is something you hit on there is, yeah, the dude got high velocity, but the strikeouts aren't there. And that's what makes it interesting for me. Like, and that could change. He's young and he's been hurt a lot, and maybe the control is an issue, so on and so forth. But I haven't seen the dominance I want from a closer. We'll wait and see. Time could change. Joyce could be something very special, of course.
Well, and the thing that's interesting about him too, Bubba, is that he gets a ton of ground balls. I mean, yeah. So, you know, maybe he profiles as more of that sinker type of guy. And instead, I mean, obviously he's got the velo on the fastball, but maybe in profiling the sinker a little bit more, which he threw like 35% of the time compared to 45% for his fastball. Maybe he's that kind of guy who just comes in and gets ground balls, even though he throws 102.
Yeah, very, very, very possible. Minnesota Twins, it's been Johan Duran's world, and we're just living in it. But Griffin Jacks, not going to start after all. Going to be in the late inning roles. He's been a guy that ever since I started doing DCs, I take Jacks late this year. Mm-hmm. If you want Griffin Jacks, you have to pay an ADP of around 250, 260, which is a little different, a little rich. But Duran always worries me basically because of the usage with Baldelli and things get weird. How are you approaching the Twin situation? Because they usually have a handful of viable draft DC type relievers.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, I keep waiting. You look at Duran's numbers and you look at his stat cast and you're like, why isn't this guy more dominant? And then you look at it, you're like, well, he actually is pretty dominant when he gets out there. But you're right. One of the issues that you have here is how these guys get used. And as a fantasy player, I mean, we always have to remember one thing, right? And for anybody that's listening, like, Rocco Baldelli is trying to win baseball games.
Yep.
We're trying to win fantasy leagues. It's a huge difference. So he's going to do what he thinks is best in those situations to get the outs when he needs them. And there are certain situations where you can bring in a guy that's 6'5" and 250 pounds in the seventh inning when you need to get 1, 2, and 3 out in the order, and that might be Duran. But to your point, Griffin Jacks is a guy that's really under the radar here in terms of maybe not so much being under the radar now because he's getting drafted higher than what he's been. But is a guy that is going to give you really good ratios and probably going to work his way into 10 saves somehow, some way. Now, if something should happen to Duran, Jacks would be the guy. Now, they also have Cole Sands. They also have Brock Stewart, who's been great, who was hurt last year. Brock Stewart, shout out to the Illinois native, ISU guy, right? So they always have guys there that they can kind of go to in that situation. I do like Jacks as a sleeper and a guy that could – get you 100 strikeouts and 10 saves with a late pick, but he's going way too early. Yeah. You know, I think people think that maybe there's more there than what there is. I mean, I think any situation in which you look at it, Duran's probably going to get somewhere between 60 and 70% of the saves. And then you're going to have Jacks and Sands and guys like that, that'll be fighting for the leftovers.
Yep. I'm with you 100%. The ADP for Jacks is killing me. So probably not going to happen in my world, unfortunately. Let's head to the New York Yankees, where I was drafting Luke Weaver very confidently for a while there, and that went up in flames. His ADP is down past 300 now since the trade for Devin Williams, because early on it was like 150. You had to pay for Weaver, but if he was the closer, that works. Now you have Devin Williams in town. It's his gig. We all know how good style bender can be out there, all that good stuff. But style bender is Adesanya from the UFC. What's your thoughts on this closing situation with the Yankees? Again, Williams is the one everyone wants. Weaver's taking a step back, though still very serviceable, mm-hmm. I think, in certain roles. But things have changed a bit.
Yeah. Excuse me there. Sorry. Obviously everyone knows that it's gonna be Devin Williams' show there. I do think Weaver still has a lot of value, and I could see him pitching a ton of innings, quite honestly. I mean, he threw 84 innings last year in that role that he was in. Obviously, in the playoffs, we saw him being used as a closer, as the highest leverage guy in New York. Obviously, I think he's going to stick in that role. But I think if he throws that many innings again, if not a little bit more, he's going to give you 100 strikeouts. He's going to give you really good ratios. And he's probably also going to walk into a few saves and probably quite a few wins. So you could get some vulture wins out of him. The other guy here that's interesting too, that kind of, this one sort of got a little bit of publicity on Twitter was they traded for Fernando Cruz.
Yeah.
They gave up a backup catcher and got Fernando Cruz. Now, a lot of people look at him and say, yeah, he's 34, Mike. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is the guy can throw the ball through the wall. And Cincinnati was never really able to harness that. But this is a guy that's got an almost 38% strikeout ratio. So now what the Yankees have done is they've rebuilt the back of their bullpen, which everyone was complaining about at the end of last year, with three power arms, right? So they've got Williams, Weaver, and Cruz. Cruz is another guy that if he throws 80 plus innings, is going to give you 100 strikeouts. The one issue there, the one worry, is the ERA and the WHIP, you know, stuff there could hurt you. But again, if anybody can figure it out, you know, in New York, he could really be a weapon there. Obviously, I think it's Devin. I think everyone knows that. You don't get the best closer in baseball and not use him as the closer. But they have a pretty powerful back end of their bullpen now all of a sudden.
Yeah, very, very powerful. And, yeah, Cruz's name was popularly mentioned between the heater and the splitter all over Twitter there. ADP is around 575 in December, as high as close to 500, as low as 725. So I think it is going up a bit because people are pretty hyped with him in New York outside of Cincinnati, but definitely a late round one to have some fun with on draft day. We'll head to the Seattle Mariners right now here. Andrés Muñoz is a guy I've learned to respect over the years talking to Ryan Bloomfield, so that's been fun. Gregory Santos, you saw him, was actually serviceable at times. There's a lot of moving. Matt Brash eventually will come back for Seattle, but it looks like it's Munoz's team to run with for now.
Yeah, this is probably going to be very unpopular, and if you get attacked in the chat, you know, you can send them to me. I'm not a huge Munoz guy. And it's not because the stuff isn't great, and it's not because he's not great. It's because I just can't ever figure out what the heck they're doing with him there. You know, you look at a guy like him and you think, oh, 30 saves. He's never done it. Yep. So he had 4 saves in 22, 13 saves in 23, and 22 last year in 60 games. 77 strikeouts in 59 innings. Great ratios, 3 wins. He's wonderful. He's great. But how are they going to use him? Is he straight up closer? If he's straight up closer and they say that he's straight up closer, then you gotta bump him up, right? Then he's a top 6 or 7 guy. But the way that it stands right now, he's not in my top 10 because I don't know how they're going to use him. And so the thing that concerns me there is that even as great as he is, if he's getting used in the 6th inning, he's not of much use to us in the fantasy world.
Yeah, no, you nailed most of my arguments I've given Bloomfield every year. I just think the usage really, really concerns me. That's been my biggest thing. But, he's stuff-wise, skills-wise, very, very good. Usage is troublesome. He falls in that, like, Johan Duran bucket for me, where I love the skill set. If you told me Duran was going to get every save chance and that's it, that'd be awesome. I feel the same with Munoz. If you don't, if you're not like big into Munoz, where would you be looking to target in that bullpen, maybe later in drafts?
Guy that I love here is Colin Snyder. He totally changed what he was doing last year, and it really worked for him. He had been sort of venturing into that journeyman pitcher status, you know, the quad A guy, right? Four A's, so you can't pitch in the major leagues very effectively, but a good triple A guy. But what he did last year was he really limited hard contact, and he switched from his sinker, which had not been giving him very much success, to a hard four-seamer and a sweeper, and that really worked for him. And so Snyder last year had an ERA under 2, and he had a 28% strikeout rate. So he actually had some pretty good success and got pressed into service a little bit too there in a higher leverage role, probably more so than what they thought that he was going to do. I know a lot of people like Gregory Santos. I think he's a middle reliever. I don't think he's a closer. I don't think, especially in Seattle and the White Sox, he'd be a closer, but I don't think he's a closer there. And they used, you know, Trent Thornton and Taylor Saucedo and guys like that to get some opportunities. I really want to see what they're going to say about how to use these guys. And then, as you said, Brash is always kind of laying there in the pile here now too, coming back, although he's projected to start the season on the IL. So I guess we'll have to see how this works out in spring. I'm just saying with Munoz, he's terrific, but buyer beware. This might be a guy that's better in real life in baseball than they have in our fantasy game.
Love it. Love it. All right, let's talk Tampa Bay Rays here. Fairbanks is always good for 20 to 24 saves. It feels like you'll have a stint or two on the IL. Mm-hmm. Then it becomes who's filling in here. I can understand arguments for a lot of guys. Like, I've been team Joe Boyle for years in Oakland. I understand the control. I love Hunter Biggie. I love, like you said, I got his chances. There's a lot of fun in the back of that Tampa bullpen, probably for people to enjoy baseball, not to play fantasy baseball, though. So how do you decipher or want to try to decipher the Tampa Bay situation?
Well, I think Fairbanks is getting traded, and I don't think he's going to go. I don't think he's going to go to a place where he's a closer unless, you know, someone's willing to do that. I mean, he's an injury waiting to happen, as you pointed out, and he also suffers from Raynaud syndrome, which is a really scary thing. You know, with the fingers getting chilled and stuff like that in the spring, and then again in the fall. He struggles, and it's a physical health issue. You know, there's nothing the guy can really do about it. So I think Fairbanks is going to get moved. Again, him too, he got 23 saves last year, but not big K stuff. You know, not in ratios okay, but an ERA over 3.5 for a closer, that freaks me out a little bit. To your point, there's a ton of different guys in Tampa that could end up being back. You could get cashed again, right? They could have 14 different guys getting saves here. Usetta is probably the guy that I like the best there. 36% K rate was fantastic down the stretch for them. His ADP is about 360 right now, so the price isn't going to kill you if he doesn't get the role. You also brought up a couple other guys there. Joe Boyle is an interesting one to think about, too. He profiles great as a relief pitcher, much better than a starter. But another guy that's a starter that Doug Dennis and I were talking about in Arizona is Drew Rasmussen. I mean, this is a guy that could actually be – he could be a closer easily. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do here. Obviously, right now it's Fairbanks. I would say, you know, I would hedge my bets if I had to pick one of these guys, and it would say Usetta. But they also have Rasmussen, Manuel Rodriguez is there. You know, Cole Sulcer has some experience closing. So I think it's going to be another wild year in Tampa.
I'm with you 100%. Said the Texas here, who I wrote about in a recent Baseball HQ article, that if any team needs to sign a closer, it is probably Texas. That bullpen is rough all around. You know, you look at roster resource and other spots, they have like Jacob Webb, who I wrote when I wrote up that piece for HQ, I was like, whoa, doesn't strike guys out. It's just a rough profile. Mm-hmm. Robert Garcia, maybe, but I think they sign a guy. What's your take on this Texas situation?
Yeah, Bubba, that was a great article, by the way. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, right now, I think I do like the Garcia trade. I think he's really nasty. I don't think he's a closer, but I think he's a guy that they could use to get some pretty high leverage outs from the left side. And kind of quietly, they've sort of rebuilt that part of their bullpen here the last week or so. They got Garcia in the trade yesterday. They also had Hobie Milner, who they signed from Milwaukee, who was very effective in Milwaukee, a sidearmer, good getting outs in the fifth, sixth inning kind of places in there. And then, you know, Josh Boers is there, but he's hurt and coming back. I think it totally makes sense that Kirby Yates goes back here, maybe bringing David Robertson along with him. They really need those guys at the back of the bullpen, and they were really effective for them last year if they decide they want to go that route. This is also a great spot for Kenley. Should he go with his 85% cutter mix to a place, Texas might be a good spot for him too. But they definitely need some help there. Garcia, I do like, but I don't, you know, people are saying, well, is he the closer now? And there was some talk about him in Washington being the closer. I just don't see it. He's great, but I just don't see him as the closer.
Yeah, I think they signed someone, and Kenley would be awesome. Maybe a reunion with Yates. Maybe they realize they tapped out that market. Who knows? There are options, lots of options in the closing market. So, yeah, I think they'll do some work for sure. Last American League team we have to talk about here, the Toronto Blue Jays. They went and re-signed Jimmy Garcia, who I depends on where you look. I've seen a lot of people say he is the closer. He's got the best stuff. Health is always a concern. Chad Green was serviceable last year. Obviously, they didn't bring Romano back. So how do you see Tech, or maybe Toronto goes and signs someone too? So what do you think Toronto does, or how would we approach that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chad Green somehow got 17 saves last year. I was looking at that the other day. I was like, how did that happen? How did I kind of missed that. I think it's Yimi at this point. I don't understand what they're doing here. I know, I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody that's a Blue Jays fan, but like, So Romano signs an $8 million contract with Philadelphia, and then they sign Yimi for twice that amount. Yep. For a guy that's probably not as good as Romano. And so I'm guessing it is Yimi at this point. I don't know what they're doing, though. I mean, are they trading Bichette? Are they extending Vlad? It's just there's so much unknown here that I would say it's Yimi. And if you luck into him and get him in a spot, I think that that's fine. I just don't see Chad Green getting 17 saves again. I mean, why?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm on full bore with you. I think Chad was the discussion when Romano got bounced, but then bringing Garcia back and maybe someone else changes that completely. All righty, let's head to the National League here, and we'll start with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Last season, we saw A.J. Puk get much better as the season went on in the back end of that Arizona bullpen after he got traded from Miami. Justin Martinez, electric, control issues, but electric. So they have options there as well. How do you see the Arizona situation playing out? Because I've gotten plenty of, let's say, later round Puk as an option just because of the price tag I can get behind it. In December, it's around 300, give or take, where Justin Martinez, he's sitting around 195, 200. So I'm taking like the 100 pick discount on Puk, and I get it. Martinez might be the guy, but I'll play the game in that matter. So how are you approaching the Arizona bullpen?
I love that you're playing the game because I don't know that I trust Justin Martinez enough to be that guy. And I don't know that Torey Lovullo is going to look at it in a way where they only have one guy that's getting saves. I mean, they've got Puk, they've got Ginkle, they've got Ryan Thompson. They had a bunch of guys that they can use to get outs wherever they kind of like to do that. Puk is a monster. I mean, I can't think of a lefty that's got more frightening stuff than he does. I mean, it's just the guy's just electric. And why they decided to try to make him a starter in Miami must have been because he asked for it. It must have been the only reason why. I love Puk. I think what you get there is a smattering of saves, even if he's not the closer, but you get the great ratios. You get the high strikeout rate. I definitely would be looking at earmarking him 100 picks after Justin Martinez. Martinez throws the ball really hard, but I also am a little concerned about some of the stuff that we saw towards the end of the season. He seemed to kind of run out of gas. The velo just wasn't quite there, and that could be a warning sign that trouble's brewing. If that happens and Puk gets elevated into that role, Puck's a top 10 closer, no doubt about it. And quite honestly, in my rankings, I have him as a top 15 reliever, even if he's not a closer, because he's going to get 10 or 12 saves no matter what he does.
Yep. First off, thank you for validating that. Second off, I am by no means experts. That's why I run these shows, and I get experts on to tell me about things, but a lot of these later round relievers I like to target, and we've kind of hinted at it a little bit. And that's why I still like Luke Weaver, especially if his price drops to past 300, so more to Puck's range, is you're going to get strikeouts ratios. And I still think like even Weaver, but with Puk, he gets you at least 10 saves. And he'll be in line for wins because he'll be in late inning leverage situations. So again, DCs, you got to put your brain to a different level when you're drafting these guys. You're not looking at, once you get late, like, okay, you're not getting a 35 save guy. You just want guys that'll help your team in whatever faction is possible as injuries develop, and then might have a chance to get saves. That was why I loved Irsig last year. I thought Miller was a dude that had no idea he'd go to Kansas City and dominate the way he did, but I still liked his strikeouts, his ratios, win potential. So that's kind of a theme you'll hear for the remainder of the show, and you probably heard early on. Just I want to reiterate that with Puk. That's why I was playing that game there, and we'll play it on some other teams down the road here. The Atlanta Braves, I am one of the biggest Raisel Iglesias guys, so is Ryan. With just the consistency, if you just look at his stat lines year after year after year, outside of a COVID year, and the year he got traded to Atlanta, 30-plus saves, strikeouts, reasonable ratios. I know you're the guy that's supposed to tell me all these things, but it's ridiculous. So what are we doing in Atlanta if we're not picking Raisel Iglesias?
Isn't it funny how that works out? I mean, I'm every year I look at these guys and I see them putting another notch on the belt and another year older, and I think, is this the year that he collapses? And Iglesias every year is a top five guy. Yep. It's like you could just write it in, right? And so he's their guy. The strikeout rate was, a lot of people were talking about that last year, but he was just pitching a little bit differently, and it ended up working out okay anyway, because he ended up with about a 26% K rate anyway. So if something were to happen to him, or he was ineffective, or he was hurt, they've got Pierce Johnson behind him. They've got Aaron Bummer behind him. They've got Dylan Lee there too. I would lean towards probably a co-closer situation between Johnson and Bummer, both who have some experience closing. I mean, Johnson obviously closed in Colorado before really finding a good spot in Atlanta. And Bummer was always supposed to be the closer in Chicago, and it never ended up working out. But he ended up having a really nice year for Atlanta, too. He finally got out of the hellhole that is the south side of Chicago and got to a place where he was very effective. So that would be my guess there. I mean, although, you know, you never know with Atlanta. I mean, they have 85 starting pitchers in AAA, so maybe one of those guys could end up becoming a closer, too. But if something should happen to Iglesias, I think Johnson and Bummer are the most natural selections there.
Yep, I'm with you. I think it's a – I hope nothing happens to Iglesias because I've planted that flag already this season. But, yeah, we'll see on that one. Let's head to the Chicago Cubs and Porter Hodge. He had his impact last year. Still not sure if he's a regular full-time dude. We'll see. I liked the addition of a Nate Pearson. He's a guy even last year I kind of liked the late-round flyer on potential there. Mm-hmm. This could be a team that signs someone. How are you assessing the Cubs situation?
Yeah, I'm, you know, Porter Hodge was really helpful to me down the stretch in a few leagues where I got him kind of, and I had been talking about him in the middle of the summer and said, hey, you know, if something happens in Chicago, I mean, Hector Neris, I mean, Jack Carter has as much chance of getting somebody out as Hector Neris did there at the end. So I don't like Hodge. he's okay. I mean, his fastball is just not good enough for me to be that guy. And some people will disagree and say he's got a really great opportunity there. But what I want to know is what you said. Are we ever going to unleash Nate Pearson? I mean, doesn't it feel like we've been waiting for him for like 15 years to be the guy?
Yep.
So you have a guy, you know, why not Pearson, right? I mean, so after the Cubs got him, I don't know if a lot of people paid attention. But, you know, he in the second half for them, he had a couple of wins. He had an ERA about 3. His whip was down to about 110. He cut down half the homers. I mean, he gave up 8 home runs in the first half, only 4 in the second half. Why not Nate Pearson? Why? I mean, he's got to be 27 or 28 years old. Why are we still muzzling this guy? I've never really been able to see somebody just take the leash off and let this guy go to work, right? Let him do his thing. Because Porter Hodge is a nice pitcher. He's not a closer on a contending team. You talk about a team that really should be spending money on bullpen. I mean, they've got Pearson, Tyson Miller, who's off the scrap heap, Keegan Thompson, Eli Morgan. Come on.
Yeah, it's bad.
Spend some money on a guy. Like, I know that they like Julian Merriweather, but Julian Merriweather is never healthy. Why are they not spending money? This is a team that really screams at you, right? That says, like, okay, you know what you guys should do right now? Go give a bunch of money to Tanner Scott. Yep. Just give him a bunch of money. They're not going to do that because they're cheap. but that's what they should do, because they really should remake the back end of their bullpen if they're serious about contending.
Yeah, when you go and make the trades they've made and, you know, gotten better in certain aspects and then other areas you question things, you need to have that closed down situation. It doesn't matter what bats you picked up. So I'm with you. I hope Pearson gets the shot, but they should spend some money for sure. Pearson's ADP, which makes him even more enticing, is hovering around 600 right now, which is a great dart to have no matter
what. That's really attractive, right?
Yes. Yeah. So I'm a fan of that as well. Cincinnati Reds. This got even more interesting over the last 24 to 48 hours. So you got Alexis Diaz, who ratio issues is what I'll say nicely. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of moving parts in that bullpen, good, bad, the ugly, you decide. But they've also, like I mentioned, the 24 to 48 hours, there's been rumors that they're looking to trade Alexis Diaz, mm-hmm. which makes things even more entertaining in Cincinnati. So who should we be looking to target then?
Yeah, it's not Emilio Pagan. We can just fast forward past that guy. But the one that is interesting here is Tony Santillan. Who is coming back off an injury. He only really got about 30 innings last year, but looked really, really good in those 30 innings. He would be the guy that I would earmark there. They've got other guys that are good bullpen pieces, Sam Moll, Brent Suter, but they're not closers. To me, it would be Santillan's job, unless they do something crazy and like make one of their starting pitchers a closer or something of that nature. I don't see that happening there, but you know, they like Chase Petty's not ready, right? You know, they're not going to use Lauder or one of those guys in the bullpen. So I'm guessing it would be Santillan. They should really trade Alexis Diaz. They're not going anywhere. And if somebody thinks that they can fix him, they should try, because I don't think you can fix him.
I'm with you. I think it's a smart business decision, but we are talking Cincinnati Reds right
now. Good point, Bubba.
Colorado Rockies. I'll just say this much. Kenley's the guy everyone's talking about, and Kenley has an ADP lower than Nate Pearson. It's 596 for Pearson's is 591. What are we doing in Colorado? Because I'll say this much. We all laugh about it. But in the end, there are guys that get saves here. And if you're looking for late saves, you're going to get one of them because they all go super late.
Well, the thing that was really funny is that, you know, a lot of people say never a Colorado pitcher, right? And, you know, I'm sort of a closet Milwaukee Brewers fan. And every year, some of my college buddies and I go to see the Brewers play. And they were playing Colorado this past year. And they brought in a guy named Seth Halverson, who even though I follow bullpens, it's sort of my quote unquote job. I mean, my job that I don't really get paid for, right? He came in and I was like, this guy is electric. I've never even heard of him. And I like literally was flipping through my phone. I was like, wow, this guy is incredible. So high velocity fastball, a guy that was just picked from Tennessee last year. So you might have heard of him when he was pitching there. But this guy has all the makings of a closer. Now, granted, I know it is Colorado. How many games are they actually going to win? They keep doing stupid things, right? Like, we don't like Ryan McMahon, so we'll sign Tyro Estrada instead. Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? Like, why? What are you doing? But Halverson is a guy that's sneaking up those boards, and he's going to continue to do so because he has a four-seamer, but he's also got a split finger that is just absolutely disgusting. And so I think this is the type of guy that actually could find success in Colorado, especially with that split. He's 24. They don't really have anybody else unless you like Victor Vodnik, who's not a closer. Tyler Kinley proves time and time again he's not a closer. Justin Lawrence is still kicking around in that bullpen. He's not a closer. Why not Seth Halverson? And I think you're going to see that shoot up. I mean, I think he's about 460 right now. Yeah,
December, he's getting closer to 400.
Yeah. But this is another guy, like we talked about with Urstig, Bubba, who's got a four pitch mix. Like, this is a guy that's a starter closing. I'm very high on him.
Yep. I like it. That's one. Again, I usually just ignore Rocky. So, a good one to keep in mind. I took notes on that one. Los Angeles Dodgers, talk about moving around. Like, I was all in on Kopech early. I still like him a lot for fantasy because of strikeouts. I love what they did in LA, obviously. No, you know, getting out of Chicago, things can benefit you in that regard. But they re-signed Blake Treinen, who in the postseason was the closer of choice for Dave Roberts. And take your grain of Dave Roberts salt as you will. So, and Evan Phillips is still there. So they have a lot of moving pieces. How are you approaching this? Because what I'll tell people is Kopech's ADP is around 190 in December. Treinen's is around 305 in December. So he's a lot cheaper. And then Evan Phillips is around 360. So all relatively decent prices, especially Trinan and Phillips.
Well, they're going to be great, and they're going to have three guys that each have at least 10 saves. And that's part of the problem with LA, right? I mean, it's the projecting of the closer there. I mean, obviously Phillips was great at the beginning of the season, and then they started mixing and matching. Dave Roberts is one of those guys you can never trust what he says, only trust what he does. And you look at what he's saying and say, oh, yeah, Kopech's going to be the guy. Yeah, today. And then tomorrow it'll be somebody else. I love Kopech, too. He really had a rough ride in Chicago. I don't think that they ever really knew how to use him. And the word on the street always was that, you know, he was hard to coach. This guy's a first-round draft pick who believes real heavily in his stuff, and why wouldn't he? His stuff is incredible. It looks like he's throwing bowling balls half the time. But he's going to be the closer there, it looks like. But they also have Phillips. They also have Treinen. Those guys are also going to get opportunities. Kopech really did not do well when he had to pitch multiple days in a row. And so it's something to always be aware of with him, too, that he'll probably end up with 20 saves somewhere in there. But I'm betting that Phillips will probably end up with 10 and Treinen a half dozen. So there's going to be a split there, I would think, in Los Angeles.
No, that's a great point, and not surprised by the split conversation there. Makes it fun, but DC is viable season long. It's a pain in the rear end. All right, let's head to the Miami Marlins, who Tanner Scott was great for last year, got traded. Then we saw a slew, like we saw Calvin Fauché do very well. People like Tinoco as well. Bender at one point was getting saves in Miami. Is it Fauché season? Should we be targeting Tinoco? Again, another team where Calvin's around 400 right now. And let me spell this properly. Tinoco is sitting at an ADP of 470-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the conventional wisdom here is that people are seemingly leaning Fauché when we're looking at the ADP. I'm not sure that they should be. I don't know. This is a guy that's a 30-year-old kind of journeyman guy that it wasn't that he didn't pitch well last year, but his ratios are always bad everywhere he's been. And I don't know that I saw enough of a pitch mix change from him last year that I really think that that it's way different. You know, I mean, he threw his cutter more than he had in years past and, you know, kind of discontinued using, you know, his curveball and used a sweeper way less and seemed to have some success. I just don't see a lot of save opportunities here. I don't see a lot of swing and miss stuff here out of Fauché. And Tinoco, you know, I think people will look at that and say, oh, well, if it's not Fauché, it'll be Tinoco. But even he, too, like if you look at what he did, like he's a 30-year-old guy, too, who's been kind of bounced around, right? He didn't even pitch in the major leagues the year before. He does throw hard, so does Fauché. He does seem to have a little bit more swing and miss stuff. So maybe Tinoco is the better pick there. I personally won't be touching this bullpen. It just really concerns me. It feels like it's full of landmines. I like Tinoco better than I like Fauché, even though Fauché seems to be the favorite for the job right now.
Yep, no, that's fair. I've heard the Tinoco conversation and didn't know enough about him to get too on board, but it seems like most are in your camp of either avoid or probably go the Tinoco route when all things are said and done. All right, let's head to Milwaukee. Obviously, we talked Devin Williams is now a New York Yankee. Trevor McGill was awesome before Williams got hurt. Then he went back to the setup role. His December ADP is 207, but he's gone as high as 84. So he's back there in the premium conversation, which he kind of supported while he was the closer in Milwaukee. So how are you looking at this? Because they can still move McGill. This is how they operate, which is very annoying with Milwaukee. So what else should we be paying attention to there?
It's a really interesting bullpen because Williams was almost a luxury for them, and they acted in such a way by trading him to the Yankees, right? So McGill slides into that role, but to your point, Bubba, very astute, he could end up getting moved as well. Or he could be ineffective, which is things that have happened before with guys that are sort of one-hit wonders. They've got a number of guys behind him. You know, I think a lot of people who maybe don't follow it as closely would say, oh, you know, Yoel Piamps or Brian Hudson, who had a bunch of wins and, you know, working behind there. The guys that I like here that I think are important to focus on are D.L. Hall and Ashby. Because I think whoever doesn't win that fifth spot is going to be a weapon in the bullpen and is going to be a monster. We had Kurt Hogue on the podcast a couple weeks ago talking about the Brewers, and he seemed to feel that Hall would be the guy who would get the starting job and that Ashby would be in the bullpen. And if any of you have seen Aaron Ashby pitch, mm-hmm. I call him Alan Ashby all the time because I'm old and Alan Ashby was an old.
I know who you're talking about. So
yeah, I know you do. I know you do. but Ashby is just a nasty, nasty dude. And he's got a bad attitude besides that. When I mean bad attitude, I mean like he wants to get people out really badly. That's a guy that really could be behind here too. So if they end up trading McGill, the loser of that combination, I think, of that contest, I think would be a guy. They also have Abner Uribe, who's not even listed on the roster right now, who a lot of people like as a closer. Although, again, his stuff is a little soft for closing, even though he's a really hard thrower. And there's another guy that's here that's sort of really kind of lying in the weeds, and that's Nick Mears, who is a guy that in Colorado – people really liked and thought was going to kind of move on up the ranks and never really has figured it out. But he looked actually really good towards down the stretch there too for them. And as a guy that could kind of come on. So there's a lot of question marks in Milwaukee. Obviously if McGill's there, it's his job. If something should happen to McGill and he gets traded, it's going to be really interesting to watch what happens there.
Yeah. This is the bullpen that I've been having fun just peppering at times in drafts, especially when I don't know who to take during a draft. I have some Hall. I have some Ashby. Right now, DL Hall's ADP is around 540 for December. Ashby is, if I can spell properly, is sitting around 429. But you mentioned the one that I've been taking late a lot, and that is Nick Mears, because I remember all the buzz when he was traded, at least maybe strikeout and ratio goodness. We'll see. Maybe finds his way to the back of the bullpen. So I like that Nick Mears call quite a bit. And then I like what you're saying about some Milwaukee Brewers action there with Ashby and Hall as well. All right, New York Mets, they've been very active. Shocker, Juan Soto, anybody. But let's talk closers for them. They still have Edwin Diaz, who had a roller coaster of a year last year. We remember Reed Garrett was once the best closer in baseball. His second half was not ideal. So there's some moving spots there. Buto is probably in the bullpen now with all the starters and whatnot. So Edwin Diaz is the guy, obviously, Mike. But what else should we be paying attention to in New York?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Garrett was kind of came out of nowhere with his pitch mix and then had a bad second half, as you point out. I think he was a setup guy. I think Buto is really well served as a setup guy, too. There's another guy here that I really like as well to keep an eye on, and that's Daniel Nunez. He's listed as a middle reliever right now, but is another guy that's got this just high-octane stuff, a 36% strikeout rate, and could come on quickly, although he did have some injuries down the stretch last year, which is probably why a lot of people might not know who he is. But Edwin Diaz, I love to watch pitch when I'm watching baseball games. He's not a guy that I really like to roster. It just feels like such – you're always going to get a spurt or two in there where he just is completely lost.
Yep.
And I just don't – I don't want that. You know what I mean? Like, I admire the guy. I think he's – when he's on, he's one of the three best guys in the game. But I need that consistency. I want to set it and forget it. I don't want to worry about my closer, you know. And I always worry about Edwin Diaz. So I usually – steer away from him. His price is always a little too high for me.
Yeah, I've kind of passed. Like recently, I've seen more Alexis Diaz in him than Edwin Diaz, and that's kind of concerning to me. Like you said, especially at the ADP we're talking about. Philadelphia Phillies, they were a mix and match bullpen in recent years, especially last season. They just went and picked up Jordan Romano, who should be the guy if healthy. Yet Kurt Green, who many have been clamoring to get his shots. Alvarado's had his moments, but fell apart late in the year. They have a lot of good pieces in the bullpen. Just not sure who else it could be outside of Romano, obviously barring health, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, it's Romano is a closer, right? I mean, he's not a guy that you're going to bring in the sixth or seventh inning. He closes. That's what he does. And if he's healthy, they must think he's healthy. They gave him $8 million. Yep. You wonder why Toronto didn't want to keep him, and that's a little concerning. However, if you look behind, you know, what you got there, obviously Kirkerian is a little bit of a fantasy darling and has been for 2 years. He's a guy that definitely will profile in a setup role for them, probably opposite of Matt Strom. This allows them to bump Alvarado back down to being used as a middle inning weapon as well, where he's nasty. Not a guy that you necessarily want closing. It's a little bit of a high wire act there with him. And I could see them actually signing another piece here too. I don't think they'll bring back Hoffman, but Romano definitely closes here. Strom and Kirkerian are behind there. I could see Kirkerian getting an opportunity here if things change or if Romano is ineffective. But you know, we know what Rob Thompson likes to do too. They're gonna have seven or eight guys that have saves in this bullpen. We don't know who those guys are all going to be yet necessarily, but that's how he rolls. And he won't be afraid to use Romano in different places and different spots in the game. He's proven that in a few years that he's been managing there already.
Yeah, and that's what still makes like Kirkering and Alvarado and some of these guys at least or darts later on if you're looking for some other bullpen help on your DCs. But yeah, I don't see them being – Romano's primary, and we'll work around it from there.
Right.
All right, Pittsburgh Pirates, they got rid of Chapman and through free agency. Bednar was benched for Chapman at one point. Man, it's an interesting bullpen. Holderman was a guy going into last season people speculated on, didn't fully come to fruition. What are you doing with Pittsburgh now? Are you going back and trusting David Bednar, who was one of the best in the game for a while? Then it just fell off the map. You can get him in an ADP around 165 right now.
Yeah, I think Bednar, if you have realistic expectations, I think he's going to be the guy again. I don't see why he wouldn't be. He was banged up a little bit last year too and kept trying to pitch through. God love him. You know, he was trying to do his job and get through it. It didn't go real well. To your point, they used Chapman. They had Dennis Santana ended up being a really good find for them last year in a middle inning role. Colin Holderman, Lodzinski, those guys – For those of you that remember a long way back, they also have Tanner Rainey in a middle relief option as well, who is a name to earmark just in case. I'm not saying he's a closer. I think it's Bednar. I think he's going to bounce back. He's got to find a little bit of velo again, but you know he's got a winner to be able to do that. And so I think it's Bednar. And if you're taking him as your closer too, I've got no problem with that.
Okay. Yeah, I like hearing some confidence there because this is the guy I used to lock in as a closer too. At one point, and last year was pretty rough. The best way I'll say it. San Diego Padres, talk about a big boy season. Robert Suarez just took the world by storm last year. Elderly, only a few years in the bigs, so I'm always cautious of this. They obviously have Jeremiah Estrada, who was awesome in the back end. Jason Adam used to be a beast with Tampa. I just think Morejon is pretty good in the reliever. So what do you like? Are you still in on Robert Suarez, or are you looking elsewhere in San Diego?
Yeah, Suarez seems like he's kind of coming at a discount right now.
Yep.
I'm sort of struggling to wrap my head around why. I think maybe people look at this and they see guys like Adam and Estrada and Morejon, as you're pointing out, and think that there might be some competition there. But one thing that we know about Bob Melvin – he likes to use one guy. He likes to use a set guy, and that set guy is Suarez. Adam doesn't really necessarily profile as a closer. He's a really good setup guy. Estrada is a guy that I'm really high on. I guess the Cubs didn't need him, so they got rid of him and let him walk. But, boy, he was quite a find last year. He had a 37% K rate, 94 strikeouts in 61 innings, 6 wins, just really chipped in and did a great job for them, carried them for a large part of the summer, quite honestly. I think it's Suarez. I don't know why people don't like him more. Maybe it's the lower K rate a little bit. I don't know, but he looks pretty good to me. And I think if you get him as your closer too, well, you should be really happy. And Estrada's ADP is like 470, mm-hmm. somewhere in there, right? So last I checked anyway, it was pretty low. You know, that's a guy that could get you a whopping amount of strikeouts too. I mean, he's going to throw 100 innings for them at some point, probably, right? If you get, well, maybe say 80 innings, and he's going to get you 100, 110 strikeouts easily. Great guy to have in your bullpen, even if he's not getting saves.
Yep, I have been circling Estrada's name a lot in those rounds, so I'm with you on that one. San Francisco Giants, Ryan Walker was one of the best relievers in baseball, turned closer last year, and was very effective. I didn't know if he'd be able to transition so well. He was awesome. Looks to be the guy for now. I still think Duvall's going to find his way back eventually, but maybe he never gets control. I could be totally wrong. If he doesn't get control, obviously he's not going to find his way back. I just know he is electric, and that's just maybe a between-the-year situation for him and a maturity issue for him. Ryan Walker's the guy, though. So what else are you seeing in San Francisco that might be of concern? Because as a Giants fan, everyone wants Rodgers to be the guy. He is not a closer. That is just the brass tacks of it. So the more I've let it sink in this offseason, it's Ryan Walker.
Yeah, Walker's really interesting, right? Because he's another one of these guys that is he can do so many different things. I mean, people might not remember, and you do as a Giants fan, but if you go back to 23, he even started games for them quite a few times, you know? And so if they want to think about this a little bit differently, I guess we'll have to see how they do that, right? But Walker is the type of guy that could be like in that hybrid two-inning role, which means he might get some wins and his save numbers might go down. I'm with you on Duvall. I don't think it's over there with him. I think it's not a stuff issue. I mean, there's no question about it. It is a between-the-ears issue. If they can get him squared away, and if anybody can do it, it's Buster Posey, right?
Bingo.
That guy's just a stud in any way possible you could think about it. I could see a situation here where people get disappointed drafting Walker as a closer, and he ends up with, you know, 8 to 10 wins and 10 to 12 saves, and then Duvall gets like 18 or 20. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, Walker's still really valuable to have on your team, no doubt about it. But let's see him do it again. Again, he's not a young guy either. He's 29, 30 years old. He's been around a little bit, you know. So I think he'll be happy to pitch in whatever role they want. It's not the Rodgers boys. I know I've seen some people talk about Sam Jelly too. Like, I don't see that. See it. I think it's a real interesting thing that could happen where Walker starts the year as the closer, adjusts into like more of a hybrid role where he might be more valuable with the Rodgers brothers, and then Duvall ends up closing again.
I 1,000% agree with that. It's almost word for word what I told someone like 2 months ago that was writing a book we all love. And this is not Ryan. I'm talking about a different writer for HQ was asking me, what do I think just as a Giants fan? And that's almost exactly what I told him. I said, Walker will get there unless Duvall shines the shoes during spring training. Mm-hmm. Eventually, like even Posey just came out and said, we're not trading Duvall. We like Duvall. He's in part of our bullpen. Like when Posey says that, I'm like, okay, they're working on like getting him back. That's the way I see it. And Walker's been better because yeah, he closed well. He's been great in long innings. He's been great as an opener last year. He did so many things that I think that team needs outside of closing if Duvall can close. So I'm with you. I know I'm biased, but Walker's ADP is around 103, where Duvall's right. like 390.
Like that's the thing that's crazy, right? It's like Duvall's ADP is so low. Like, why not take a chance on him at that spot?
Yeah. And like you said, Walker will still be very valuable in a DC. Zero doubts about that. But if you're drafting him for saves, be aggressive on more saves sooner than later.
Absolutely.
All right, St. Louis Cardinals, two teams left to go here. Ryan Helsley had a season for the ages last year, shocked many of people by doing so. And then the rest of that bullpen is a whole lot of what is going on. So how are you assessing the Cardinals?
Yeah, they had, you know, if you play in holds leagues, I mean, they had Jojo Romero and Andrew Kittredge that were just fantastic for that situation. Kittredge is a free agent. Hello, White Sox. Maybe he could be your closer. Helsley, a lot of rumor about him getting traded too, but I don't see where he goes now. Like, I don't know where that would be. I mean, the Cubs could use him, no doubt. There's a few teams out there that could use a guy like this. Detroit would be another one. Texas would be another one. If he stays put, obviously he's the closer. We've always known this guy's got great stuff. We've always known that he could be what he was last year. It's the injury history that always gives you pause with him. And his 23 was a bit of a lost thing. 24, he was as good as they got. He's outside of that top five just because of the injury concern and because I'm not certain about where he's going to be pitching. If something were to happen and Helsley got traded, the guy that I do like here is Ryan Fernandez. An interesting guy to take a look at. Kind of under the radar last year for them, pitched in a middle innings role, did work his way up into a setup man type of role for them. And a guy that you might want to earmark. And nothing special, but he had a couple saves for them. He had a bunch of holds as well. He would be a guy that I think would step up into that. I've seen some people talk about Matthew Liberatore too. I don't know about that. I mean, it feels like they've been waiting for him for years, a la Nate Pearson, to kind of figure out what he is. I don't know that he's that guy unless he figures out something in spring that we're not seeing yet.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ivan. He's burned so many bridges that I was like, I got to see it with him before I can believe it. There's some massive control issues with him. And again, I said that with Duvall, and I'm kind of interested there. So take whatever grains of salt you want with that analysis. Washington Nationals wraps things up here. Shocked many by not bringing Kyle Finnegan back. That was shocking. Like I said it twice in like two sentences, but yes. And then you look at all the different charts, Derek Law, Ferrer, Adon, it is bad, Mike. So what are we doing with Washington?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? So they've got this young core of guys with Abrams, even when he's not gambling at 5 o'clock in the morning. James Wood, Cruz, they just got Nathaniel Lowe, right? However, they still got a bunch of outfield issues and questions out there, I guess. But you know, they're building something there. It would surprise me if they went into the season with this setup the way that it is. They signed Michael Soroka to a $9 million contract for reasons I don't fully understand to be a starter. I don't know what they're thinking here, but I'm guessing that they're going to have to add to the back end of that bullpen. I mean, Derek Law is not a closer. He's a really good guy to have in the middle there, but he's also 34 years old. He's never been a closer. They don't really have anybody else here that you look at and say, ooh, that's a guy that you'd be interested in. It's not Ferrer. Ferrer's a lefty. They don't really have anybody down in, you know, in AAA or AA that looks like they're on the come. I mean, unless they did something like, you know, make Jackson Rutledge a closer, which doesn't make any sense at all. So the question that I have is, you know, they let Finnegan walk for nothing, and now they've got nothing at the back end of their bullpen. So they're going to have to do something. What they do, I don't know. Maybe they're in the market for a closer trade via trade. They seem to not be afraid to pull the trigger there, but there's no way they can go into the season with this as the back end of their bullpen. It would just be a disaster.
Because like you said, they're building something. They're maybe they're another year or two away, but they got something nice brewing. So it'd be nice to have a closer that could maybe help them win a few games, but maybe they don't want to win. So we shall see. All right, we've kind of hinted at teams needing closers, and I just wanted to highlight some of the names that are out there on the open market, especially because their ADPs are between 125 and 268 right now. So they're going ahead of a lot of guys we talked about on this show. Mm-hmm. So people are drafting them as such closers. So I just want to get your thoughts on if we should be approaching him as a closer and so on and so forth. So we'll start with Tanner Scott. You mentioned him a lot, so I'm pretty sure you think he should be a closer. He's been valuable for it. His ADP is 175. Would you be approaching that ADP and saying, yes, please?
Yeah, very. That's sexy.
Yeah. All right. Kirby Yates, ADP is 125.
Yeah, that's a little high ADP for me. It depends on where he ends up. He could easily end up in a setup role. I do think he's going to end up back in Texas. It just seems like a really good fit for him there. If he does end up back there, then I like his ability to be able to get 20 saves. But here's again, it's a guy that's 37 years old and a history of arm troubles. Those don't just go away as you get older.
I'm 100% with you there. Kenley Jansen, 186.
That's incredible, isn't it? I mean, at some point that it's going to fall apart. I mean, the guy threw 85% cutters last year. He's 37 years old. He just keeps doing it, and he just keeps getting results. And he's always going to have some type of a nagging foot injury or a knee injury or something that's going to block him. But, man, do you want to bet against him getting 20 saves next year? I don't.
He's 20 to 30 saves every year, and that's a big gap. He's getting at least 20. Ratios have slowly been creeping, but still not like anything dramatic for his ADP value. Strikeouts have gone down just a little bit. Still nothing bad for his ADP value. And Ryan made a good point the other day, and I really agree with this point, is some of these guys could sign somewhere and be in a committee or whatever. Kenley's only signing to close. Kenley probably has no problem calling it a career if he doesn't get a closing kick.
He'll walk if he doesn't get a job.
He's not signing to be a seventh-inning guy. He'll sign with the White Sox and be a closer before he goes and takes a seventh-inning role for any other. That's where he's at in his career.
The Sox might need to use him three innings in a row to try to win a game. But to your point, I mean, I think where his ADP is right now, depending on how you look at how you want to build it, I mean, okay, let's say that the ratios aren't great and you don't get the strikeouts that you think that you want to have. Well, then down the road, take an Estrada, take somebody like that to help you augment your strikeouts.
100%. Great call. Kyle Finnegan, 268.
Yeah, this guy's not closing on a contender, right? I mean, I don't think that that's going to happen. I see him as he'd be a real effective late inning, high leverage guy on a really good team. If he goes to a bad team and he closes, you're doing the live wire act again. I'm kind of out on him, I think.
And I just threw it out there for fun because there's rumors he might start. Who knows? Jeff Hoffman at 260.
Take him. Because who cares what his role is? I mean, the guy is just electric. I do think he would be a top 10 closer if he had a real chance at it, a real job. There was a lot of times when I was watching Philadelphia during the spring and in the summer where I was like, why is this guy not closing? Like, he's just dynamic. And the reason why is because Rob Thompson knows what he's doing and I don't. And he'd get him in the sixth or seventh inning when you were hoping he might be able to get a save. And then Matt Strom ends up with the save, but Hoffman's got the better stat line, right? So if he ends up starting at that ADP, either role, I mean, I think he's going to be a useful guy. I have no problem taking him. Torres and I were just talking about that the other day. He was asking me about what I thought the role would be. I said, who cares? Yeah. At that ADP, take him.
I'm with you. You're going to get pretty solid production regardless of how that goes. And how it went was awesome, Mr. Carter. 30 teams plus a little more. Any final thoughts before we wrap up another fun episode with you?
No, Bubba, I always, whenever you ask me to come on, I always will stop what I'm doing to come on with you because
appreciate that.
Going back a long way, you and I have talked about this a lot, and I've known you for several years now. We meet up in Arizona every year and get a chance to break bread and hang out. When I was first started writing in 2020 in the middle of the COVID stuff, your podcast and your work was a benchmark for me. It was something that I accessed on a weekly basis. It was something that I really listened to. Your personality comes through in everything you do. your personality on the air is the same as who you are in real life, and there's no BS, there's no pretentiousness. You were always welcoming and always really kind to somebody who was trying to get started as an old guy. And I have always appreciated that about you. I always say that to you whenever we talk. And I just have always appreciated the fact that you always have a spot for everybody. You know, there's you're a friend to everybody that's in the industry and on the periphery of the industry. And I can't thank you enough for all the opportunities you've given me and all the fun that we have just talking ball, man. I really appreciate you as a friend and as somebody in the industry as well.
Well, the feelings are mutual, my friend. I appreciate you for always coming on. Didn't get a Jack appearance today. We'll get him next time, but it's always fun. So yeah, I appreciate you, my friend. And until we get to break bread again, that'll be great. AKA drink a beer and have a good time, which will be awesome. But it's nice of you to say such kind things when once a year you have to come and talk about the White Sox with me. So I'm not always easy going on everybody. So I appreciate you. Again, one other thing I want to mention, I'll let you do it this time in case I didn't cover it all. Let everybody know all the work, where they can find you, the podcast, the writing, all that good stuff.
Oh, geez. Well, thanks again. You know, we just moved the Fantasy Baseball Beat onto the Pitcherless family of podcasts, which we're excited and thrilled about. It's a great opportunity for Chris and Dave and I to be on there. I'll still be writing about bullpens over at Fantrax, and I'll be covering a couple of pieces a week. It looks like at Rotoballer, I don't know exactly what those pieces are yet, but you know, content is coming out and we're working on all that stuff year round as you are. And I really appreciate the opportunity that I get to work at all and do these things, as it's definitely a blessing for me. And it's something that it allows me to get a distraction from my work, which can be really heavy sometimes. So I really appreciate that. For those of you that are on the Twitter, it's at MDRC0508, the worst Twitter handle of all time. We've gone through that story many times. No need to repeat it. It's terrible. It's the worst. I explained it in Arizona this past winter, and it didn't go any better explaining it in person. So it is what it is. And thank you for having me. And if any of you ever have any questions about this type of stuff, you can always hit me up on DMs. Also, if you ever have any mental health stuff that's going on, it's a big thing that Chris and Dave and I do on our podcast. My DMs are always open. I don't shut them down. Every once in a while, I get somebody come through there that I can really help. And that's not a baseball thing. That's like a human being thing. And that's way more important. Always be there for each other, especially for men. We don't talk about stuff. It's really important that we do that.
Yep, I support that full-heartedly. We always talk about that towards the end of the show, and I think that's a very important thing. You hit Mike up. He's actually more of a professional at this than I am. I can help, though. I started therapy 4 or 5 years ago, and it's helped me a ton. Like, there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that at all. So, yeah, I highly advise talking to Mike or someone else if you need to. Don't be shy is the best way I'll say it. There's nothing wrong with that.
Amen.
It goes a long, long ways. But, yeah, we'll do it again, my friend. And check out the Fantasy Baseball Beat. I used to do beat writer podcasts back in the day. They're awesome. They're the best. I wish I did more of them, because the longer you can talk to them, the more you get out the good stuff, not just the clips you see. They're a very fun show, and they love to talk. And I'm not meaning that negatively. That's what they love, because usually they're the ones getting talked to. So they love to be able to talk back. So it makes for a fun show, and they're doing a great job there. So check that out. Mike's work and much more at that wonderful Twitter handle he mentioned as well, MDRC0508. And I'm on Twitter at BDIntric. Until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 707. Catch y'all later.